wouldn't change places with anyone tonight. We'll carve pumpkin faces and watch the witches' flight. Every human heart will shudder, every soul will shake with fear. Tonight, the creepiest. Tonight, the scariest. Tonight, the most wonderful. Anything can happen on Halloween. Your dog could turn into a cat. There may be a toad in your bass guitar, or your sister could turn into a bat.
Hello and welcome to episode 82 of the Blue Cup Tools Podcast, or should I say the Boo Cup Tools Podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Kunislav, and with me, as always, is the Grinch of Halloween.
The Grinch of Halloween, wouldn't that be like the... Wouldn't... Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Hello, I'm Ben Sandler. Nothing's changed.
Well, I'm just trying to be, you know, festive and seasonal. This is our third Halloween episode.
Yeah, but Halloween's not really a thing here, as you probably know.
I know. But I've heard...
it is a little bit.
I've heard tell that in recent years it's become more of a thing than anything.
Yeah, we're kind of homogenized to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for better or for worse, I suppose having Halloween isn't such a terrible thing. It's fun. No. You know, you get to eat candy.
It's fun to dress up, but...
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I assume you have no plans for Halloween. Being that you just said that you don't really... It's not really a thing.
I mean, I was out all last weekend, and November is a very busy month for me, so...
Yeah, fair enough.
It's all good.
Is it a busy month for you?
Yep.
November?
Yep.
I thought October was the busy month.
What do you mean? Well, November's busy as well.
Oh, okay. What happens in November? Is there a harvest?
I got all sorts of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, November harvest usually starts, and I got things.
How mysterious. Anyway.
Well, I don't think it's interesting to the listeners of our podcast, so I'm not going to bore them with the details. It's basically what I'm saying.
That's fair enough. How have you been? What's been going on? You just mentioned you were busy in October. Well, how was your weekend?
It was good, yeah. Played some music and ran an event, and the same event I help run, I don't run it myself, but I help run an event every October, and it's always fun. You know, we get a lot of kids come out, usually about 1,000 kids, a bit more, a bit less. I think this year we had a bit more than last year, so that
now,
was pretty good.
When you say kids, what age range are you talking about?
Between 18 and, you know, 30, I guess.
Congratulations, you are now an old man.
That's fine.
Which, actually...
Everybody calls people that attend music events the kids.
I guess.
You don't go to music events, so you wouldn't know this.
Yeah, well, no, but I'm old enough that I can refer to anyone under the age of 30 as a kid.
Well, you can refer to anybody as anything you want, really, I think.
Yeah, shut up,
and
kid.
And I make a habit of doing so.
Yeah, that's true, that's very true.
So, you know, just say what you want. Yeah. No one cares.
Fair enough. What was I going to say? I don't know. I was asking you how you were doing, and you were telling me. I'm a bit sick, so I'm a little loopy in the head, if it's
yeah,
not
you
already
sound
apparent.
Less fuzzy and stuffy than you were yesterday.
I am, but I also took a pill which made me sleep for 3 hours, and I was very groggy when you last spoke to me. So.
Yeah, but you took the pill that you meant to take at nighttime.
I know, I just wanted to sleep. I thought that would help me, and it did. It did. I can't deny that it definitely made me feel better. So, yeah. Anyway. I, as I mentioned in the last podcast, there was a play crafting expo, and I took Shardlight and I showed it off there, and we got some good feedback, and it was nice. And then over the weekend, I went to Sleepy Hollow on Saturday. I took a train ride upstate a little bit to Tarrytown / Sleepy Hollow.
Which I was is surprised how place. Close it is to you.
Yeah, I know you were.
It's hardly like, yeah.
No, it's funny because, yeah, it's funny because, like, people will say, oh, let's go upstate. And to me, upstate, because, I mean, New York City is right at the very bottom of the state. So to me,
yeah,
going upstate sounds like you're taking a trip
big
up.
Adventure.
Yeah, like 3 hours up, like to Albany or Troy or something, which is even still like the middle of the state. It's huge. So yeah, but to most New York City people, going upstate is like anything outside of the Bronx, which is basically like half an hour north, which is amusing.
Yeah,
to me.
Well, you said Sleepy Hollow was like 35 minutes by the train.
Yeah. Well, that's if you're...
That's crazy. Man, it takes you an hour to get to the airport, right?
Yeah, it does, actually.
That's ridiculous. It takes you longer to get to the airport than to Sleepy Hollow. That's incredible.
Yeah, that is... I didn't actually think about that until you just mentioned it right now. Mm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, I mean, foot to... Door to door, it takes a little longer because obviously you have to take the train to Grand Central Station and then take the train from Grand Central Station up to Sleepy Hollow. So, like, to get from my place to Grand Central Station would take about 40 minutes. So, it comes to about the same. But
that's
yeah.
still, like, you're like, oh, we went on this trip away, and then you told me, like, where you went and how far. And I was like, man, that's so close.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Like, it takes me longer to... It's further for me to get, like, groceries.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah. You know, it's...
I mean, I live in a very isolated part of
you
the
do,
world, so...
You do, you do.
Anyway.
But that's fine. It has its quaint charms, as well as its, you know, wide-open spaces.
And no rain.
Dust and flies and no rain, yeah. But hey, you deal.
Yeah. anyway.
So, yeah, what have you been playing?
Oh, shit.
Also, excuse me, I'm about to cough. Please continue.
I've been playing a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot. I played, what have I played? I've played...
I don't know, I just asked.
I played a point-and-click adventure by the name of Murder on Steam, a cyberpunk point-and-click adventure.
Yes, how did you enjoy that?
I played Peter Moorhead's first game, Stranded, and I thought, oh, this guy's got potential. You know, he's a young guy, he's coming up. I played Murder, I did not like it at all.
Hmm.
At all. I thought, really nice art. Really nice music, decent voice acting, and absolutely not one original idea anywhere in it at all.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, so that's one cyberpunk point-and-click adventure play. I also played Read Only Memories, which is a cyberpunk point-and-click adventure / visual novel. Sorry, I need a minute to think.
Uh-huh.
And that was better.
I thought maybe it had
a lot of characters. It's, you know, it was pretty long. I think I played it for 6 hours or something like that, but I enjoyed playing through that. That was a good time. So, ooh, you know.
I got an email.
That's fine.
But it made a noise, and now
so
the podcasters will know.
I played a lot of cyberpunk point-and-click adventure. Another one, cyberpunk point-and-click adventure called Void and Meddler, which is somewhere...
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of those. Because I was playing... what's it called? Elle's Heartbreak as well, which is a cyberpunk point-and-click. It's the year of cyberpunk point-and-click adventures. Even I did one.
Yeah.
With James and Dave. So, yeah. But anyway, so I played Void and Meddler. That's somewhere like a cross between Murder and Read Only Memories. It's got a lot more character than... thing, but it kind of, there's a few things in it, like, it tries so hard to be edgy, and it's just, like, it's way too trying hard, like, to be edgy, and I'm just like, eh, but you know, it's got, at least, unlike Murder, it's got, like, some interesting ideas, and, like, it actually has some character of its own, what, even though it's a small amount, you know, I'm still grateful and appreciative of that, so... That's pretty good. It looks great. It looks, like, great. Like, it's a little weird, the, what's it called? The animations and the backdrops are very... They don't mesh super, super well. but it looks good. It sounds pretty good. The soundtrack's pretty cool. And, you know, I have got my share of issues that I'm like, I would have preferred this done this way or whatever. But it's whatever it is. You know, I'm not going to complain. So, what else have I been playing? I've been playing Lovely Planet. Yeah, what's the best way to describe that?
I don't know, but I just want to say that before when you said slash, I thought maybe you were implying you were making like a pee joke.
No.
But I guess I was wrong.
You were wrong.
I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Well, you're only got, incorrectness. You're only disappointed yourself.
Have I, though? Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, we better.
Moving on to what you've played.
Which is a very, very weird first-person shooter. It's really like it's totally a product of the indie game speedrun game generation. It's really weird. It's got really crazy music. And what else has it got that I can say? I mean, you need really quick reflexes to play it, which I love because I love first-person shooters, and you know, I grew up playing twitchy first-person shooters, so to me that's like everything I ever wanted for Christmas. It's a video game, not Christmas. But it's very, very, very bizarre. And it's kind of funny because I got it just randomly in Indie Box because I get the Indie Box stuff. And I sort of got it, so now I have like all the feelies, and it's just really, really weird. There's like chopsticks in the shape of some of the enemies and stuff.
Not enough people make feelies anymore. I miss the days of feelies.
Well, get the Indie Box. They do feelies. They do. It's pretty good. Like, it's surprisingly good.
If we were doing a boxed copy of Shard Light, which we're not, I would include
just
like
smash up glass and just
Exactly. That'd be great.
And people would sue us.
No, they wouldn't sue us because it would say we could put warning: contains shards of glass on the box.
Warning: if you're an idiot, don't buy our game.
Well, no, we could make little plastic glow in the dark shards. That would be cool.
Yeah, but they wouldn't. I guess.
And then you could hang them on things. That would be amazing.
Hang myself.
Oh my god! I'm sorry that my suggestion.
I've been doing
feelies
a lot of animating.
Yeah, clearly you're in artist mode.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's got
I don't know
dark.
Where to go from here?
I don't know. Well, it's a Halloween episode. We can be dark.
What's that? Sorry.
I said it's the Halloween episode. We can afford to be dark.
Yeah. Still gonna get hanged. I've also been playing. I just before starting the podcast, started playing some Kingdom, which is really good. It's really good. I'm really loving the aesthetic so far.
Oh, good.
And it's kind of like it reminds me a little bit of Firefly Studios' Stronghold. That's not correct grammar. I know. Don't.
It's fine.
But yeah, I've been watching it, and then I was like, I should check this out. You know, I like the way it looks. I should check it out. So it's kind of weird. Like, you don't do anything. It's just allocating resources. You don't fight at all. But it's kind of cool. There's like, even if everyone, like the bad guys, it's like at day you build and expand, and at night the bandits come. So that's a cool thing. Like, you feel night coming and you're like, oh, you know, am I going to have those offenses built in time? That sort of feeling is, I like that a lot.
I like it too, but it's been a while since I played a game like that.
Yeah, but yeah, so there's this sense of like, you know, do I expand further and wider?
Or do I risk,
bolster the defenses that I've already got in my base, or do I spend money on this? So yeah, it's really about resource allocation, but it's cool because like, even if you mess up and like the bandits get into your thing, you can like, you've got a chance of rebuilding. But if the bandits knock the crown off your head, the bandits just break in and basically steal. Right. If the bandits knock the crown from your head and steal it, that's game over. So that's a kind of cool, like,
That actually sounds like a game that I would enjoy a lot. Where can you get such a game?
It's on GOG.com is where I bought it. I imagine it's on Steam as well, but I got it from GOG.com.
Is it a recent release or is it older?
Very recent, yes.
Oh, okay. I'll have to check it out because
it's low res, but it's really pretty. It's got a great soundtrack. Oh,
like that's really going to make a difference.
Well, I like to explain what you're getting into.
I know. But yeah, on this podcast of all places, low res being an issue is definitely, that would be the most hypocritical thing ever.
That's correct. But yeah, so I'm enjoying that a lot. Have I been playing anything else, Francisco?
I don't know. It's hard to keep track of what you've been playing.
I play
even
a lot.
You even have
I play a lot of smaller games. Oh, I played some of The Yorg.
Oh, yeah, I saw you. I saw a little Steam notification for that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's really, really good. It's like super basic.
But I can't remember what it's about.
It's basically like a choose your own adventure for up to four players.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I know those words don't go together. But it's really cool because like you've got 6 weeks and every week you make a decision of what you're going to do. You choose a character each and you sort of make a decision. And I really liked it. It's a really simple kind of sweet thing where, you know, it's kind of, you think it's really basic, like, oh, you're just picking an option, like, whoa, whocares.com/nobody. And when you actually play it, it's really compelling because random stuff happens and you're never quite sure what's going to happen. So you're just kind of like, well, I'll just let the game take me for a journey. And like, that's really cool when you're just happy to sit back and face whatever consequence the game deems you should, you know?
That sounds like a slightly less frustrating version of Gods Will Be Watching.
Yeah, I've got that, but I haven't played it yet.
Mm. Mm.
Okay. I've heard that that's really, really frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically, from what I've heard, it's pretty much left all up to chance most of the time.
That's disappointing.
It is, but what are you going to do?
Well, play a better game.
Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, is that it? Is that, I played a visual novel called The Empty Apartment that was free and it wasn't very good.
Okay, well, if that's all, then I'll talk about
that. That's all I can remember for now. Okay. I'm sure there's more than that. There's always more than that.
That's why you need to keep a list, so you keep our podcast listeners informed and whatnot.
Yeah, so you can know what exciting things I've been playing.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I have been playing... I care what you've been playing.
Okay. That's what you've been playing, because I've been talking to you.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you've been playing because I've been talking to you, but you don't tell me what you've been playing because you play so much that you don't...
That's true, and I just get like to the point where like, no one gives a shit what I've been playing.
Nah, you tell me about what you've been playing sometimes. Anyway, so what have I been playing then, Smarty Pants?
You've been you platinum trophy finished Batman.
That's true.
The Arkham Knight.
That is very true, yes.
And then you've been playing Bloodborne on PlayStation 4.
That is absolutely right. You're absolutely correct on both counts.
Now you're finding Bloodborne quite difficult.
I was finding Bloodborne quite difficult, but after I talked to you last night, I went and I played some more, and I actually made quite good progress. Oh my god, I said progress. I've been talking to you too long. I actually made quite good progress on it. So now I feel like it's not as hard. It just was a matter of, you know, getting good at it.
Learning?
Yeah, learning and figuring out what did what, and... The tricky thing is that I mean, it's an interesting game. I won't deny that it's very atmospheric, which is very topical. The mechanics are easy to pick up. I mean, it's
mostly just hitting people, right?
It is mostly just hitting people, but you have to strategize your combat because you'll easily get like, depending on what situation you find yourself in, you can easily get like 5 or 6 enemies surrounding you and all attacking you at the same time, and if that happens, even the most low-level enemy that you can kill in one hit will kill you in, like, 2 hits. So...
That's just what I need in my life. Thanks. Yeah.
So you really need to plan out your battles and sort of, you know, think, is this... Can I get away with this? Can I do this? The good thing is that there's plenty of, like, pickups, enemies drop a lot of health stuff, and there's actually a nice little thing where if an enemy hits you, your health doesn't drain right away. There's like this, the bar sort of goes down a little bit, but the bit that got hit stays in orange, and if you hit the enemy back within a certain amount of time, your life will go back up. So,
you kind of have this frantic rush to hit them back.
Exactly, exactly. And there's a few special attacks which I just discovered yesterday, which help immensely. Like if you hit an enemy a certain way, you can stagger them, which basically means they like get sort of stunned. And if you run up real close and you hit them, you do a visceral attack, which basically drains all of their life, which helps a lot.
I like the way the word visceral is spelled. Have I ever told you that?
You haven't.
No, I really do.
Okay. I think visceral is overused in games journalism, but that's about it, really. That's all I
Yeah, there's a lot of words that are overused in games journalism.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, as far as the story goes, I haven't really gotten too much into the story, because it kind of just plops you in and lets you figure stuff out for yourself. There's really very little by way of tutorial. There's like these weird ghost things that hover out of the ground that bring you notes that tell you what to do.
Just like AGS.
Yeah, exactly. And so yeah, you basically just get to explore this city and kill monsters and stumble upon creatures that the first time you meet them probably kill you, and then you die, and then you all the enemies respawn, and you have to do it over and over and over again until you make some form of progress. The interesting thing, though, is that there's like gates and stuff that close off other areas, and once you open those stay open despite the monsters respawning. So it's kind of like, even though there aren't really checkpoints, there's only one major checkpoint. Those kind of serve as shortcut checkpoints, if you will. And yeah, I beat the first boss last night, which allowed me to unlock leveling up, which has helped quite a lot. And I'm currently trying to fight the second boss, who's very tough. But the cool thing is that there's an item that you have that allows you to get an advantage on the second boss. Although I still have no idea why I'm fighting him or what's going on. But it amuses me because his name is Father Gascoigne. And aside from the fact that that's just a funny word because it has the word gas in it, it also reminds me of the Gascoigne region of Western Australia, where we went to. Was that where Denham was, or was it that further north, or was that further south?
I'm not actually sure. Good question.
It's either Denham or Geraldton or Carnarvon.
There's a lot of regions in Western Australia, and there's no like signs going, hey, you're in the Gascoigne, or you're in the Pilbara, or you're in the Kimberley.
Well, the Gascoigne's pretty big. I think...
Dude, the whole state's pretty big.
Yeah,
so
I know.
There's two small regions, and then the rest are just massive.
Yeah, I think...
Size of a Scandinavian country.
I think Carnarvon was in the Gascoigne, because I think I remember seeing signs for like the Gascoigne Hotel or something like that when we were in Carnarvon.
The Gassy.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, so yeah, that's Bloodborne, and it seems like there's a lot more to be discovered, and I'm curious to see what will happen and what awaits. My insight level has gone up, which is fun because I hear that once your insight goes up, interesting things start to happen. So we'll see.
Just like in real life.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's pretty much all I've been playing, because I don't play small things, I play big, long chunks. Ugh, that sounds gross. Anyway.
Sounds like the cat food ad you were telling me about before.
Oh yeah, that's true. So I should probably mention this on the podcast. As I was telling you this story, I was thinking I should probably talk about this on the podcast rather than tell you just straight out, but so you'll have to bear with me as I say it again. So yeah, there used to be cat food commercials where, long story short, the cats would get fed these amazing gourmet meals that were cut up. It was literally just canned food cut up into cubes and little bits with garnishes of parsley and stuff. I'm mostly thinking of Fancy Feast. And it always made me wonder, like, what person was so rich and decadent enough that they would have a cat that they would spoil like that? Like, they're feeding their cat better than they probably feed their family. I don't know. I wouldn't give a cat parsley.
And then I told you that my mother has a friend that only feeds her cat yogurts.
I would hate to clean out... If that cat is an indoor cat, I would hate to clean out its litter box. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never asked about that.
Probably for the best. That's just one of those things that I think is best left to the imagination.
Some things are better left unasked.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, well. Anyway.
I'm doing really well on my second game of Kingdom, by the way. I'm expecting to die any second now, but I'm actually doing pretty well. So,
what's your play style? What do you allocate your resources to?
Well, I started with defense. Okay. I started because first time I was just experimenting, you know, finding what happened, and then the bandits came and I got overrun pretty quick. So I'm like, okay, I need instead of expanding wide, I'm going to have a stronger home base. I'm going to turtle, as the RTS players call it.
Turtle?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Is it turtle or tortoise? But yeah, you basically hide in a shell.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like I would probably dedicate most of my resources to defense at the beginning.
Because just how I like to play. It's only my second playthrough, so maybe I'll learn like later if you go out really early and you find a powerful thing and you get it, then... That totally negates the need to do the thing. But, you know, at this point, I'm just carefully going about it. Going, where the hell is my chest of coins? Because I want to level up my campfire.
It's always fun to experiment in gameplay and try new things and then find things that you thought weren't going to work and they actually do. Like, I told you about when I was playing Bloodborne the other day, I was messaging you and in between swears, I mentioned that I had found an enemy that was like a one hit kill. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh man, I can't deal with this guy. This is going to be too much. But through exploration and trial and error and playing and stuff, I figured out that there's actually quite a simple way to kill him. So that was fun.
That's something I really, really, really love in games, is when you're presented with a challenge and you have to figure out how to solve the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than like a quest marker, like that's, I get really sick of like when I play newer Assassin's Creed and Grand Theft Auto games like this, and you just get a marker on the map and you just go to the marker and do the thing tells you, and then they go, oh, here's a cutscene.
Yeah,
that's really started to bore me lately, and I'd rather have a thing where I got no idea what I'm gonna do, and I figure it out by myself.
How do you think that applies to adventure games? Because people always
Everyone's got a different play style, you know? I mean, I'm the weirdo guy that likes mazes.
Yeah, sure. But people get upset when you have no clear goals and, you know.
It's not so much about having clear goals. I think it's about giving clear feedback sometimes.
Mm.
You know, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, what do I know? Nothing. Wow. But yeah, that's something that I really like, is when you get to be creative in your problem solving rather than just like doing, like that's what I find a lot of AAA titles now, like the Batman games suffer from it a lot. Assassin's Creed games suffer from it a lot. Grand Theft Auto games suffer from it. It's just literally going to the place and doing the thing.
So there's a bunch of side missions in Arkham Knight, obviously, because that's how Batman games work. And some of them are entertaining, some of them are a bit tedious, busy work, as all these games tend to be.
But
there's this one side mission called Campaign for Disarmament, in which there's all these bombs that have been placed in the ground around Gotham, and you basically have to find them.
Sounds like every other Batman mission, dude.
Well... But you have to find them and you have to use the Batmobile to disarm them. So, this is how it works. You find the bomb, you use the Batmobile's power winch to hook up to the bomb, you press X to start a virus upload, and while that's happening, a whole bunch of tanks and drones and stuff show up and attack you, and you have to defeat them all. And then when you defeat them all, you can hook up the power winch and rev up the engine to blow up the bomb, right? So... Mm-hmm. You have to do this, I think, about 15 to 20 times. I don't remember. But there's quite a lot of them. So you'd figure that by the time you did the second or third one, you'd figure out what the mechanics were and what you have to do, right?
I guess.
Right. Well, every single time that you finish the mission, or every single time that you defeat the tanks, Batman says... The bomb's power load is exposed. I can use the Batmobile's power winch to trigger a controlled explosive. And it's like, by the 13th time you hear this, you're like, I know, Batman, I've done this 12 times before. Do you really have such a boring thought process that you think the exact same thing every single time you do something?
You know what it is, though, don't you?
What, is it reminding people who haven't played for a while? Yeah,
it'll be people that have put it away for a week and they come back like, I don't know what I'm meant to do here.
Well, that's stupid. Those people shouldn't... They shouldn't pander to those people.
I don't know. I think that's how they make so much money, by pandering to people so that everybody can play, rather than, like hardcore people. Because, like, a lot of the games that I like playing aren't...
I don't know. I don't think it's too hardcore to ask a player to remember that all you have to do is perform the exact same action that you did before.
I guess.
I mean, there's like other things...
It's like QuickTime events. Like, they literally tell you the button to press on the screen.
Well,
like,
yeah.
Wow, that's immersive. That was sarcasm.
I know it was. I could tell by your tone.
Good.
You don't have to put smiley faces when you're speaking.
But there's a point where it gets too complex, I think. I found, like, Pillars of Eternity. I don't know if I mentioned this or not. Maybe I'm too idiot. But
maybe I'm too idiot?
Yeah, to have mentioned it. Oh. To remember. But there's, like, I found definitely in Pillars of Eternity, I was talking about it with Illich, and, like, the spell system in that, they tried to do a really clever kind of paper-scissors-rock thing where, like, you know, this guy's strong against will attacks, so you got to hit him with a thing that's not will. Mm-hmm. Maybe he's weak against deflection attacks or anything like this. And it was just, I just looked at it and went, oh, who gives a shit? Like, I can't be bothered learning this really... It's probably not that complex, but I just looked at it and just went, I just don't care. Just go away. And I ended up just using whatever attack on whoever. Because the game wasn't exactly hard.
No.
Except for the final boss. I found the final boss pretty challenging, but maybe I'm a wuss.
Oh, well. Mm. So, moving on to today's topic. You proposed a nice topic, which is...
Yeah. Well, I thought we could talk about... We were thinking about Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
It is that time of year. And you were talking about, like, making games spooky and horror and everything like that makes a good horror game. And I thought, why don't we broaden it
to Before you go any further, you said the word spooky, which makes me want to address something. So, I've been seeing on Twitter and online and stuff people using the word spoopy.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell does that mean?
It means
is that just so? Why are they spelling it spoopy and not spooky? I feel like a really old man.
You are a really old man.
I feel like an old man waving his cane around, talking about how he doesn't understand the youth and their music and their rap music and stuff.
I like spelling a word wrong.
But why is that a thing?
Because the internet likes clinging to interesting and strange memes that not many people understand, but many people go along with.
Strange, I can give you. Interesting, I'm not going for. Spoopy just sounds dumb. I'm sorry, internet, but please don't use the word spoopy.
You're not going to stop them, Francisco.
But I can... You know, you've told me many times that one person can change things.
It's true.
I'm doing my part to try and stop people from using the word spoopy.
You'd be right, man. Just relax.
Yeah, I know. I am relaxed. Anyway, sorry. Please continue with your topic explanation.
Yeah, so I thought we could expand this to talk about atmosphere and how you can establish atmosphere, how you can build atmosphere in games, obviously, because that's what we're talking about. But within games, the subsections of music, writing, design, art, that sort of thing.
Don't. Goodbye.
Yeah.
we should just change the format of our podcast to that every week.
Yeah, just like, me just presenting a topic.
Yeah, present like a really interesting
four words about it, and then just that's it.
Yeah, that's it. We should do that for our April Fool's podcast.
I don't want to do an April Fool's podcast, really, dude.
All right, fine. Anyway, yeah, atmosphere in games. Yeah, building atmosphere in games. I would say that it's 50-50. I'd say 50%, well, maybe 70-30. 70% writing and art and everything, and 30% sound design. Because sound really, I think, adds a lot to atmosphere.
Yeah.
Obviously, it depends on what you're going for in your game. There's certain atmospheres that are way more challenging to present correctly than others. I mean, any fool can make a haunted house game and add some creaking windows and ooh noises and yeah. What?
Sorry.
What? What was that?
Nothing.
Wait, no, really, what was that? Because it sounded... No, because it sounded really familiar, and if it's what I think it is, it would be amazing if it was a reference you were making.
No.
Oh. Now I'm disappointed.
Good, I love it when you get disappointed. That's my favorite. Oh, man.
You're mean.
I'm an asshole.
I like it when you cackle at my disappointment. It's very
I love to cackle. Cackling's my favorite thing. Cackling's really grown on me as I've become further and further retreated into my own twisted psyche.
I was going to say unhinged from reality.
Well, that's yeah, true, but it's pretty the same much, thing.
It is pretty much the same thing. I'm glad we're on the same page there. Yeah, see, the atmosphere right there, a cackling witch in your background, yeah. So, yeah, I'm thinking, I was going to say ways to do it well and ways not to do it well. But, yeah, I mean, there's ways to do it well and there's ways to do it lazily. Like, so, there's a YouTube personality who goes by the name Some Guy, who, if you haven't, listeners, if you haven't heard of him, you should go check out his videos, because he does a series called Overanalyzed Adventures. This guy knows a lot about point-and-click adventures. He plays, like, every single adventure game that comes out, like, from the most obscure to the most popular, he plays them. And he does a series of videos where he overanalyzes them, which basically he plays through them. It's kind of like a Let's Play, except he does it as sort of like a summary of what's going on. He doesn't just, like, actually play through the game and comment as he's playing. He just kind of tells you what happens, and he jumps ahead a little bit and whatever. And okay. He plays...
It's interesting, because you sort of, when you first watch him, you watch him do a Golden Wake, and you said to me, have you heard of... And I sort of went, oh, he must be some popular guy, and I went, he's actually quite obscure, and I went, that's why I haven't heard of him.
He is, which is a shame, because he really has a really unique narration style, and he has a pretty funny, I mean, not funny, funny like, oh my god, that's strange, yeah, but he has a funny voice, like, he
sounded like Gabriel Knight to me.
He has a very deep, very, oh, well, let's see what's going on now type thing, and it's very pleasant to listen to.
It was almost Duke Nukem.
But I'm Duke Nukem, and I'm here
no,
to...
you've lost it, you've oh. lost it.
You'll I'm Duke Nukem, I'm John St. John.
That's Shake such it. A great name.
Shake it, baby. I wonder if that's his real name. Anyway.
I hope
so. So,
dude, if that's not his real name, my whole life will just crash down.
I'm sorry, then let's not investigate it any further. Anyway, so Some Guy, he plays a lot of games, as I said, and he played recently a game called... He's playing one right now, which is amazing, which is Dark Years, which is just, oh my god, the voice acting just makes me laugh like crazy every time I hear it. Anyway, so he played a game a while back called, I don't even remember what it was called, but it was something like the Eldritch Horror or something like that. It was basically Lovecraft.
I hate it already just based on the name.
Yeah, it was basically a Lovecraft game where you play as a guy who is looking for his father, I think, and the whole, it comes in episodes, and he played the first two episodes, and each episode is like 12 minutes long. They're really short. And they're made in Unity, and he points out how, like, most of the things are from the asset store, and you basically just have to find keys and stuff. But the reason I bring this up is because this game is a dark horror game that's based on Lovecraft, and basically it tries to establish the spooky atmosphere by having it be really dark and just having scary noises playing in the background and, like, you know, oh, creaky floors and all this stuff. But, I mean, if that had been employed in a game where the rest of the game, where the design and the puzzles and things reflected and complemented that, then it might have worked. But it doesn't work to create the atmosphere because of the fact that the game itself is so unpolished and terrible. So, the 70% is not working here, but the 30% is. And, I mean, I'm sure you have other... examples. I'm trying to think of if there's any other examples of games where you the you know that the writing and everything is on point, but the sound kind of doesn't really do much to enhance it and kind of takes you out of it.
It's interesting. One thing like similar to that for me that I notice a lot is you'll have like these adventure games where they've really tried and gone with like a story that's, you know, dark or deep or whatever, and you know they've sort of got the graphics looking right and they've got the voice acting, if not amazing, then at least close to what you expect.
Mm-hmm.
And then the puzzles are sticking a duck to a fucking, you know, to a spoon, and you're like, this is not horror.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think atmosphere, if anything takes you out of it,
yeah,
anything, even if it's just the gameplay. Oh, that's that. I played a horror game this week. I forgot about that. Jesus, I'm hopeless.
What game was it?
What was it called? Black Island, I want to say.
Oh, I think I've heard of that one.
Yeah, I was playing it, and I was enjoying it, and I was into it. I was kind of, you know, it was whatever it was, but I was getting into it, and I was like, oh, this is okay, I can handle this. And then it had a fucking, what's it called?
A sliding tile puzzle?
No, even worse, Peg Solitaire.
Oh, yeah, right, I think I saw you.
And I just, that was it.
I think I saw you tweet about that. I was like,
all right, that's it, I'm done.
Peg Solitaire? Is that like the little triangle where you have to hop over the pegs?
It's not a it wasn't a triangle, but yeah, like that.
Okay.
And I was just like, I'm like, fucking done.
Like the little stupid puzzles you get. I'm not enjoying this Cracker Barrel. At all. Yeah.
It was just really disappointing, you know?
Yeah, that's a
shame.
The game
that I was otherwise really enjoying.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, I'm trying to think of, did you ever play the Black Mirror?
I know, but I thought about playing it.
Yeah, I played a little bit of it, and, like, it was okay. The voice acting was kind of meh, which kind of took away from the atmosphere. But, I mean, they were trying. They definitely had a very spooky-looking house, and I keep using the word spooky. They had a very atmospheric house, and the environments were well done and stuff, but it was just really slow-paced and really just not interesting, so the atmosphere really couldn't save it there. But yeah, building atmosphere is challenging. I mean,
I just lasted 16 days in Kingdom on my second playthrough. I'm pretty proud of that.
Good job.
Yeah, but yeah, I agree, like, in terms of elements that you know are going to work, there are certain things, certain aspects that you know are going to do the job, you know. There are musical keys and intervals that you know will provide a certain sound. There's certain color schemes that when you combine them, you know will provide a certain image. And a lot of the times you know that stuff because you've seen people do it in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know? One thing that I really like, because in the films that I watched last year, was in Alien and in The Thing, where a lot of the time the horror is not sort of that you saw a gross thing, but that feeling of paranoia where you don't know where it is. That's, to me, that's a lot more interesting than sort of, you know. And of course, there's the Slender Man gang going around. Well, there's a lot of them where if you see the Slender Man, don't look at him, face away from him, and you know the creepiness that comes from that. But yeah, sometimes I think what you don't show but hint at is as powerful or more powerful.
I just, by the way, looked at our podcast list, and in episode 17 we talked about atmosphere.
That's okay. They've all forgotten that by now, because we have, so.
Yeah, probably. But it's fine. We can talk about atmosphere as it relates to horror games, since it's Halloween.
Yeah.
I know what I can talk about with this, but please finish your train of thought.
You've interrupted me too many times, you've made me forget.
That's not true.
It's true, I don't know now.
You're so forgetful.
Well, you keep interrupting me. You're very rude.
I'm going to call you Forgetful Jones, and I'm going to be the interrupter.
I'm going to call you a rude... No, I won't say on the podcast, but I'll call you a very rude young man. So there. I can't believe I actually censored a word from my mouth.
I can't believe it either, especially since I know what word it was. But
you don't know what word it was.
If it had to be censored, I have a pretty vague idea of what it was. You weren't going to call me a drongo.
You wombat.
Yo. Oh my god, I just turned into Beavis there for a second.
You really did?
I was trying to go for the folk and bass voice, but I ended up going for Beavis instead. What would an Australian Beavis sound like?
Horrible.
Do it.
No.
You're more like Butthead anyway.
I am. If I do a voice from that show, I get Butthead closer than anyone else.
Yeah, you do.
Anyway.
Shut up, Butthead.
That wasn't very good, I'm sorry.
I know, I wasn't supposed
you
to.
You can do some voices quite well, but not that one.
I can do Gilbert Gottfried way too well.
Oh, dear.
Jaffa! No, alright, let's stop at that. Anyway.
I don't know.
Okay, so I actually watched, there's a horror game that came out recently for PlayStation 4 called Until Dawn. And I watched a Let's Play of it because I had heard some things about it and I wanted to check it out. And it was just, it turned into one of those things where I was like, I'll watch one video, and then I ended up watching the entire thing because it was interesting. I wanted to see what happened. And also because I figured if I ever do get the game, there's you know, several different ways of playing it. And you know, just this person's playthrough won't necessarily be the entirety of the game. And I did get that because there were certain things that were left unanswered that I felt if they had made different choices, probably would have gotten answered. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so as far as atmosphere goes in that game, there are certain things that are done really well, and there are certain things that are done terribly, in my opinion. One of the things was, I mean, it was interesting because I think I described it to you as kind of like a Quantic Dream game done well, or at least better.
Yeah.
Because it very much was of that type. It was, you know, you control the characters, you basically walk around and just explore things, you make choices, like Telltale style. It's kind of like a hybrid of Quantic Dream and Telltale. Except there's not really dialogue options, there's just kind of make decisions and quick time events and things like that. So it was interesting because it's framed as, you know, just like a teen slasher B movie, but that actually works really well in as far as the gameplay design of these types of games, because you're switching between characters constantly. It keeps the pace going well. You know, there's the whole, you know, cheesy fun of being chased by a killer and stuff, and there's the whole added bonus of, you know, any character can die, all the characters can die, none of them can die, so it offers interesting replay value. So the general premise is that it's this group of friends who meet at this cabin a year after this horrible tragedy has happened at this cabin, and they're kind of meeting to sort of get over it and whatever. And
right.
There's a terrible snowstorm happening, and it's dark and it's nighttime, and strange things start happening, and throughout the course of the story they realize that the threat will be gone once it's dawn. So it becomes a race against time to survive until dawn.
A race against time.
It literally is a race against time.
That's such a strange term.
It is. Also,
surely it would be more a test of endurance?
I suppose. A test of not getting killed.
Yeah.
So anyway, I lost my train of thought now because you interrupted me. No, it's fine. I didn't. No, it's fine. That's how conversations work. So it's this snowy cabin. The atmosphere is done really well because obviously they have these great, you know, that's when you, the bits where they're walking outside, it's snowy and you hear the wind and there's the nice crunching of the snow underneath their feet as they walk. And I've always said that, I think I mentioned this last time we talked about atmosphere, I've always said that, like, if I'm playing a game, like, Red Dead Redemption has that great snowy mountainous area,
yeah.
And I know you hate Uncharted 2, but Uncharted 2 has the whole snow level bit. But if I'm playing a game, yeah, if I'm playing a game and it has a snowy level or something like that, and I subconsciously start feeling cold, then I know that the atmosphere is good. And that Until Dawn does a good job of doing that. The one thing that it doesn't do too well within that, which, I mean, this is maybe asking for a bit much, but there's a couple of scenes later on where, like, throughout the course of running away from whatever it is they're running away from, some characters fall in the water, and they go, ah! And they don't really react beyond that, which, if you fall into some water at sub-zero temperatures, you're probably going to do more than just, ah! Yeah, and then there's another scene where there's a character who has begun undressing because he is, you know, going to do some teenage hanky-panky with his girlfriend, who then gets kidnapped, and then he runs outside looking for her in a tank top and pants, and
he's going to be cold.
He's going to be cold, and he's not. He doesn't react to it. So that something that simple was kind of an atmosphere.
Yeah, that's
killer.
Interesting.
The other thing that I found interesting, which was actually quite frustrating, was they go into the cabin, right, and they make this whole big deal about how they need to light a fire because it's cold. And they spend about 20 minutes going back and forth about lighting the fire. Nobody turns on any lights, so the interior of the cabin is always dark, which I get helps the whole, ooh, it's scary thing. But if you're going up to your family's cabin, you'd think that the power would be on. They don't mention anything about the power being cut because of the storm or anything like that. At least not that I caught. Which might
be
a thing.
I mean, in that case, you can just have a character turn the light on. Or try to turn the light on. And fail.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a bit later on where they go underneath to the basement to turn the boiler on. And they need to start up a generator to start the boiler because the character wants to take a hot bath. But, so there's obviously power happening, or at least the generator. So why can't they just turn on the lights? I would think it would build atmosphere way more if the cabin, which the cabin is their sort of safe haven, if the cabin had like a nice warm glow to it because of the electric lights, and then outside was the sort of harsh wintry blue, you know?
That's a little overdone, but yeah.
It is, but at the same time, it helps, you know? And
One thing it brings to mind, Gone Home, where Gone Home, if you haven't played Gone Home, first of all,
play Gone
seriously,
Home, what's wrong
it
with
takes
you?
Like 2 hours, like 3 hours, 4 hours. Depends
15 seconds
you are,
if you 15 seconds if you speedrun it like those people
yeah.
did.
Yeah, but it's not a long game. Go and play it, you know. If you're not going to go and play it and you want to wait till a sale or whatever, you've waited way too long and don't listen to the next bit. Gone Home, as we all know, because we've all played it now, those who are listening, pretends to be a ghost story. And then turns out to not really be a ghost story. That's like, whether there is or is there a ghost doesn't really matter. But there's this really great moment where you're kind of going through this house, and the best thing about the house is that there's nothing other than a few tiny things to suggest that it's a ghost story, but because we all know that old houses that are big and there's no one in them, and we don't know where everyone's gone, we all know that that's going to be a ghost story. It kind of plays to your expectations before it subverts it, which I really like. And there's one point where you're just going through, like, some little back hallway, and you go past a light globe, and the light bulb just blows, just like that. And you're kind of like, oh, this is the big reveal of the ghost. And it's fun because it's such a little tiny thing, you know, to have a light bulb blow.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to say that I'm very glad you brought that up, because that is probably the closest Gone Home gets to a jump scare.
Yeah.
And Until Dawn is fucking full of jump scares, and I don't like jump scares.
Well, everybody's talked about jump scares. We all know that they're cheap and stupid.
They are cheap and stupid, and it's really a shame that Until Dawn relies on them so heavily, because it could have been much more interesting if they didn't. And I know that jump scares are sort of kind of expected in cheesy teen horror flicks.
Yeah.
But I mean, it could have been done so much better. Jump scares are, they help atmosphere, I guess, in establishing the scariness, but they're so cheap and dumb. Please don't.
Well, you're watching a teen horror flick, dude.
I guess. And half the time, the jump scares just are the stupid kids jumping out and going boo to scare the other ones.
Yeah, well, that's what kids do.
Yeah, well, it's dumb.
But yeah, there's talking about horror stuff. I know you haven't played very, very much of it yet, but Vampire: The Masquerade Bloodlines is a great game for atmosphere. And Dave and I always talk about it, because we talk about, like, you know, urban fantasy. And when we were talking about Blackwell, especially Epiphany, we were like, oh, we want to get that feeling of, like, it's a city late at night, and it's not quite safe, and, you know, all this kind of thing. So that's a really great one. But there's a bit... I mentioned the game in Square Waves FM when they were talking about scary games. There's this bit... There's a hotel. I think it's the Ocean Beach Hotel. It's, like, this really old hotel, and you kind of go there, and the premise is that it's haunted, but the place is haunted because you're in, like, the World of Darkness. Right. So it's really... That's got jump scare moments, but it's so well done. It's just amazing. And, like, you know, you'll be walking along and you hear, like, vases, like, just, like, ting, 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 ting. And as you walk past and they, like, fly at you and smash against your body and stuff like that. It's really, really good. I really love that bit in the game. So, yeah, just that, even when it is really on the nose and, like, yes, there are ghosts, and yes, you know, you turn the corner and you see the ghost run down the hallway and all that stuff. Sometimes that can be really, really, really good.
Do they go, ooh?
No.
I want to make, you know, someone should make a first-person horror.
I like how you instantly went from I want to make to someone else should do it. Like, well, in the space of 2 seconds, I've given up on my motivation already.
No, because the idea is so terrible that I don't want it attributed to me. I don't want to release this monstrosity upon the world.
You made all your other games, so...
very funny. No, but even I won't stoop to this level, Cackly McCacklerson. I want someone to make a first-person survival horror game, but based in the Scooby-Doo universe. So you walk around the house...
How would that be terrible? That would be fucking amazing.
You'd have the ghosts in sheets going, ooh, going past. And then, like, you'd have to participate in the door chase. And, like, you'd go through one door and it would teleport you to the other side of the house.
That would be the hardest maze to figure out. Those I could never, like, work out.
No, you just have to run straight forward while the music is playing while they're being chased by the...
Such, there's the best scenes I love where you've got eight doors and, like, you never know. And then, like, they turn around like they're running to each other and then go past each other. Oh, that's the best thing.
Yeah.
Now, that's a game that, that's not a bad idea. That's a great idea. Why haven't they done that?
A Scooby-Doo first person. And then you can switch between the characters, too.
Yeah. Everyone would always play as Velma because she's the coolest.
Well, but I mean, you'd only have, you know, it'd be like Maniac Mansion where you could have, like,
the bit where she loses her glasses and, like, she's
searching and then your vision
every time and, like, the monster's right there above her.
And your vision gets all fuzzy when her glasses fall off.
Yeah.
And, like, Shaggy.
I always like that bit.
Yeah. Shaggy would just have to find places to hide and Fred and
he'd
Daphne
jump
would
into
just.
Scooby's arms.
Yeah.
Or Scooby would jump into his arms.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be an interesting game. Zoinks! Yeah. Like, look out, Scoob!
And Freddy was, like, the boringest.
Oh, Fred was the worst. Fred was just like, alright, gang!
Had hair. And purple.
Fred and Daphne would always go off and make out together when they would split up.
Fred
and then
probably.
Velma would. Yeah. Right. Well, okay, good. I want to talk about... do you have anything more to say about atmosphere in scary games?
I think sometimes you want to show something, and if you actually show it in lots of detail, it just looks stupid.
Yeah.
Like, there's a point where it's just like, you know, that's not very scary, but if you just hint at it being there, Lovecraft was the number one of doing that, like, oh, you know, ancient eldritch horrors that even to imagine it would drive a man mad. I pick on Lovecraft for this all the time, but he didn't tell you anything. Like, he never said a thing. He was always like, oh, to even describe it would fill the man with horror. And you're just like, well, you're a writer, describe it. Don't make me do all the work. I always feel like when I read Lovecraft, like, I'm doing all the work, but, you know.
Go ahead.
I don't want to pick on you too much. Do you remember in Ben Jordan 8 where you've got, like, the prequel bit where you've got, like, the flying vampire head thing?
Yes.
I wonder if you'd shown that a bit more subtly if it would be a lot more effective, because when I see that flying vampire head, I'm like, hee.
Well, I mean, come on. It is pretty silly.
But you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder if maybe that's why Lovecraft is such a popular choice for settings in games, because it's open to interpret. Well, no, it's open to interpretation what the horrible things can look like.
Yeah. Well, to an extent, I mean, a game that I played that I forgot to tell you. I played The Room.
Oh, The Room?
Yeah.
Not the Tommy Wiseau one.
No, the Tommy Wiseau game, the Flash game. No, this was... It's like a puzzle box. I laughed so much at that.
I know, I was there.
But yeah, it was like, it's like a puzzle box, but with like this Lovecrafty bit and like, you know, it kind of, one thing I really liked about The Room in the game, not the Newgrounds Flash one, is that the puzzles are all really tactile. So you slide things with your mouse, you turn them, you rotate them, you flip them over. I really liked that a lot.
Interesting.
Like, we've got a few things like that. You know, I got a bit crazy with some programming in Shardlight and put a few things like that into the game. I really like tactile puzzles. They're really satisfying to me.
Yeah, not just
the solution out, but the act of inputting the solution into the mechanism.
Sure. There's a puzzle that I put in that is basically us trying to do a 3D object where you have to look at it from all sides. So
yeah,
I know what you mean.
Kind of, yeah, but kind but of I'm
like
but
oh, but you mean like actually performing the
drag
action.
A thing around?
Right. Yeah.
I really like that. Not so much just like click the thing and it goes a different angle,
or shake this controller and drink the orange to shake the orange juice.
Yeah, this is more like you actually grab the thing and you pull it.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I like building puzzles like that, and I like to see people put that in. I enjoyed The Room a lot, except the plot was just the plot was literally Lovecraft's pretty cool.
No, well.
That was the entire plot. So, you know, I could have done without that. I mean, it was enough to make me like, okay, I can see that people would be interested in this, and it gives the person a reason for the weird puzzle boxes. But it's really just a puzzle box. But, like, a series of puzzle boxes. And they're quite good. Very. I recommend you check it out.
Okay, I will.
They're good puzzles to solve.
Good.
Some quite dangerous ones, too.
So, to wrap up, there is something I would like to discuss.
Okay.
An issue that has been brought to my attention, and yours as well. And since it is Halloween, it's horrifying and terrifying. And I think you know exactly what it is that I'm going to talk about.
Well,
This week at the Paris Sony Expo thing, it was
revealed... Oh, I thought you were going to play the Tim Curry Worst Witch song.
No, that's I already did that. That's the intro to our podcast.
Oh, good.
It was revealed that Quantic Dream and David Cage are working on a new project, and...
Is anybody surprised at this point?
Well, no one's surprised at this point, but about three people tweeted at both of us saying, "Hey guys, did you see this? Hey guys, look." And since we have a bit of a reputation on this podcast for talking about David Cage and his many things, it would be bad of us to not mention the fact that yes, he has revealed his new project, Detroit: Become Human, or as I like to call it, Detroit. I watched the trailer for it. I have to say, it looks pretty much like every other David Cage game ever made, which is to say, it takes a bunch of ideas from other things and repurposes them to their own thing. It reminded me of that TV show on AMC that I don't remember the name of right now, that's about androids. And it also reminded me of kind of Demolition Man in the aesthetic anyway. But it was just, you didn't watch it, right?
No, I don't watch it because you're an idiot.
But you're not interested in it at all. Did you watch the tech demo that they put out a while back with the robot girl, the android girl who's like they're talking to, and she's like, "Oh, I'm afraid, I don't want to be put away, blah blah blah." No? Okay. Well, this is basically a continuation of that tech demo. You apparently play as an android girl named Kara, who escapes the factory and tries to lead a robot or an android revolution, I guess. or become human or something. So the trailer's basically her narrating about how she feels something inside and blah, 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 blah. And Detroit looks like David Cage's vision of American cities, and all the androids are just like whatever. And yeah, I really am not interested in it at all, I'm sorry to say. It's probably going to be more of the same crap.
Yeah, I kind of... I just don't care.
I mean...
I feel the same way about David Cage's Detroit Become Human as I feel about Assassin's Creed Syndicate. I pretty much have seen everything they're going to give me.
Well...
I know what's coming, and I don't care for it. I've experienced it in one or two games, and that's enough. Like, that's why I don't... And that's why I'm not interested in a new Batman game. I played two of those games, and they were the same game.
The thing with Assassin's Creed Syndicate is that, in its defense, at least from what I've seen in some of the reviews, and Anita Sarkeesian's review, it's interesting story-wise and character-wise how they're trying new things as far as, you know, what they're including with the characters and the diversity of the characters and whatnot.
In terms of now the Templars are good and the Assassins are bad, or...?
No, not even that. No, the fact that they have, like, one of the lead characters is a female and she's not objectified and not sexualized, and they have...
Oh, but dude, there's a fucking million stories where there's women as the main thing. That's
I know,
a
I know,
that's
I
just
know.
New to video, it's new to AAA video games.
It's new to Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a trans character, and they have, you know, just other stuff that Assassin's Creed hasn't really explored before, which is okay.
Well, I think gameplay-wise, are admirable, but yeah. In terms of the actual narrative itself,
no,
I
of course,
I would give a quarter of a shit about it.
Gameplay-wise, it's the same thing, and they're okay. The Templars and the Assassins,
I mean, got
and we have to find the thing,
sells
and whatever.
A billion copies.
Yeah, I know, I know.
Why are they going to change it? And the narrative is always going to be the same. You're going to have Templars, you're going to have Assassins, and who cares?
I know. But
that's,
I mean,
that's the same thing, like, why I'm not interested in David Cage's game, because I know what it's going to be.
Right, it's going to be
over-melodramatic,
yeah,
on-rails crud that I don't care much for.
Mm.
You know.
Yes. Well, anyway. So. David, I am not going to play Detroit. I am sorry. And I'm also xenophobic. So, on that note...
Yeah, I think it's great that Assassin's Creed have, like, bucked up and gone, oh, we can actually put characters that aren't all guys in our games.
All white
that's
guys
cool.
in our games. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. They should do that. But that doesn't make me interested in the game. I'm not going to play the game because, oh, it's got a female character, I got to play it. Wow.
No, I mean, I'm a fan of the series, as you know. And
yeah.
I gave up on Unity because it looked like crap. But I have to confess that I am somewhat interested in Syndicate because of the fact that it's in Victorian London. And, I mean, I'm not going to rush out and buy it right away, but I'll probably get it at some point when there's a price drop.
What was Dave telling me about it? He said it kind of redeemed itself a bit, but...
Okay. It doesn't surprise me that Dave is playing it. I know Dave is a fan
of the
series.
Dave loves Assassin's Creed.
Yeah. Did he play Unity? But, I forget.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, he said... That's right. He said, he said he enjoys it, but feels nothing from it. He doesn't think that they care about the characters at all.
Oh.
Which is kind of how I feel about Assassin's Creed, the bits that I played. I'm just like...
Eh.
I feel nothing for these characters at all.
Oh, well.
Oh, I think they're very beautiful games, but, you know.
Yeah, they've gotten prettier with the,
They've always been... Man, Assassin's Creed games have always been pretty from the first one.
But they've gotten prettier with on this new generation, because I noticed...
They've gotten prettier with every game.
Yeah, but I noticed, because the very last mission in the Assassin's Creed Rogue, which no one ever talks about anymore... takes place to kind of overlap with the very first intro bit of Assassin's Creed Unity, and both are set in Versailles. And just the way that it looks, it's the exact same environment, but the way that it looks is night and day in both, in the PS3 and the PS4 iterations of it.
Mm.
Yeah, so... But I mean, of course, that all has to do with, you know, the lighting and the shaders and all that stuff, the PS4.
Yeah, there's a lot of new technology that keeps coming out, and
higher res
clever uses of existing technology.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, I think that about wraps things up for this episode. So thank you for listening, as always. If you want to follow us on Twitter, the requirements are find me at Grunislav Games.
I am at Ben_304.
And together, we are at BCT_podcast. We're getting better at this simultaneous thing, I think.
If you're tired of starting over, stop giving up.
Yes, do it. So this time, yeah, all right. I see what you did there. Right. Well, have a happy and safe Halloween if you celebrate Halloween, and if not, then just go make an excuse to eat a lot of candy. That's what I'm going to do.
Oh man, I forgot that it's the one that you can eat candy on. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow.
You can eat candy on all of them, really, but it's Halloween that glorifies it.
That's the one where everyone else is doing it. You don't feel left out for eating 6,000 jelly beans.
Why would you eat 6,000 jelly beans?
It tastes good.
Why not 10,000? Go for the gold.
Because that's just being ridiculous. What's wrong with you?
Many things. Bye!